Good morning. That was really weak. Good morning.
Good morning.
Hey, I know it's cold outside, but you can still say good morning. Hey, One quick announcement before we get going this morning. This week, you still have the opportunity to sign up to lead a spring break immersion trip that will be going out of our office. So if you'd like to lead one of those trips, you can check our website, get an application, and apply. We would love to have your help leading those trips. This morning, we're going to continue to dwell, as we have been dwelling all semester, in the book of Philippians, with Paul's prayer again in the very beginning. His prayer that your love might overflow more and more with knowledge and wisdom, to help you discern what is best, so that on the day of Christ Jesus you may be pure and blameless, having produced the harvest of righteousness that comes through Christ to the glory and praise of God. This is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. Hear this translation of this same prayer from New Testament theologian N.T. Wright. Some of it's the same, and some of it's a little different, but hear this. And this is what I'm praying, says Paul, that your love may overflow still more and more in knowledge and in all astute wisdom. Then you'll be able to tell the difference between good and evil and be sincere and faultless on the day of the Messiah, filled to overflowing with the fruit of right living that comes through King Jesus to God's glory and praise. That our love will overflow more and more with knowledge and wisdom. Hopefully you have heard us, and not just us, say that this idea of love for the ancient Greeks, and so for Paul and those hearing this letter, is different than what we think of. We have a tendency to separate our heart and our head, whereas ancient Greeks saw it all as one being. We have a tendency to romanticize love and attach it to a feeling or an affection or emotion. Maybe have visions of birds bursting into song as we walk through the pine grove, hand in hand, gazing into the eyes of that cute boy or girl in our biology or English class who, if they just talked to us, we know they'd fall in love with us. It might happen like that. But the birds are migrating, so you might need to wait till next spring for the full vision to come to fruition. This is not the kind of love that Paul is talking about. Paul is talking about a kind of love that will grow in knowledge, and not just book smart knowledge, but in all astute wisdom. And that as that happens, we'll grow to learn to love God more and the world that God has created us to live in. We love lots of things. Some love pizza. Others love puppies. Oh, there's that affection again, man. Some love coffee. I love coffee. Some love sunshine. One of the things I love is dinner parties. Now, hands down, I would argue that I do believe that I have one of the best jobs in the entire world. But I've always said, if I could figure out a way to make a living out of hosting dinner parties, I'd do it in a second. I'm a sucker for good food and good conversation and good conversation that lingers over good food and a great atmosphere. I love it. That's why this past weekend I was really excited because the dinner group that I'm a part of with my church was getting together. There's about 6 or 8 of us that get together to eat a meal and we take turns hosting. And on Friday night, it was actually in the house of Dr. Mark and Becky husband's house. So I was getting ready to go, and I was in charge of the appetizer. What's great is when you can combine two things you love. I love dinner parties, and I love bacon. It's true. Yeah. Everything is kind of better with bacon. So here, it was great, because I had some extra dates. Dates as in figs, not as in, like, dates. Then I was going to wrap in bacon. So think food, not people. Sorry. Extra dates in my fridge. I had some bacon. So I thought I was going to wrap them up, and I was going to grill them, and it was going to be delicious. So I got it all ready, put them on the skewers, wrapped them, put them on the grill. I set the timer for 4 minutes because I was cooking another appetizer because I'm not the one that brings chips and salsa. I like to prove that I can show up with something. So I got two appetizers going, 4 minutes, I kid you not. I go back out to the grill, and I hear this roar of a flame. And I think, well, that's kind of weird. And I lift up the top of the grill, and I am not kidding you, it was like not like, woo, some flames. Like the whole thing was on fire. And my first thought should have probably been, holy crap, I could burn my house down. But it was, I wonder if I can still salvage that bacon. So rather than going and getting a fire extinguisher, I take this napkin and I'm like beating at it and nothing's happening. So I close it, I go back in, and finally I'm like, yeah, I should probably turn off the gas, stop it. So turn off the gas. Anyway, this is what I ended up with. 4 minutes, man, it doesn't take long. So that's what happened. There was three edible ones. I did eat them before I went. They were really good. I didn't take that. And there's one more angle I'd like to point out here. Yeah, right there. Now, I like this angle because you see this one right here? I think it kind of looks like a pig. And here's the thing. It made me realize, you can take it down, it's pretty disturbing. It made me realize that when I say that I love bacon, I should be giving thanks for the pig who allowed me to enjoy the delicacy of that meat. Some of you know that I spent some time living and working in the Dominican Republic for Young Life. And it wasn't until I moved there that I really began to give thought to eating and the fact that the meat that I was eating was once a living being. And this first came to my attention when I moved into a neighborhood where around the corner there was a butcher. I didn't realize it was a butcher because it looked like a regular house. And every day there was this cow out in the morning, and by the afternoon, I remember thinking over and over again, God, those neighbors keep losing their cow, keeps getting loose. Now you laugh. You laugh. But I bet that most of us in this room couldn't name all the edible parts of even a chicken. And let me tell you something, it includes more than breast, thighs, and they don't have fingers. All right? Many of us are so removed from our food that we don't really think about it. I have another great story about a pig roast once in a work team and watching someone literally become a vegetarian on the spot, but you can grab me some other time for that. Here's the thing. In order for us to eat, something needs to die. Whether you're a vegetarian or not, in order for us to eat, something that was once alive is now dead. And here's the thing. We're created to eat. God intended it to be this way. God created a world that could provide this source of life for us. It's meant to be a gift, and we are meant to receive this gift, this source of life. But what has happened to us is that we have taken something that is meant to be a gift, a source of life, and we've commodified it and made it a product. We've become consumers, not receivers. What has happened is what God has intended to be a source of life has become a source of death to our fields, to all of God's creatures. Death to our own humanity. We've taken food and made it a product. We've commodified it. Wendell Berry, an author, a poet, a farmer, and really a very bright economist, says that we live in an economy of the one-night stand. We like things cheap and easy. We don't want to know the name. We don't want to do the work of really having the relationship. We just want to consume. We speak of food with words like fast, convenient, prepackaged. And we pay, or somebody pays people lots of money to have our food look a certain way, unblemished, shiny, uniform. Where some who harvest and produce our food hardly get paid enough to feed themselves. The commodifying of these goods leads us to believe that these goods exist in and of themselves, and we forget that cheese comes from cows, who are meant to eat grass and not grain. That this package of tuna needed a thriving ecosystem of water in order to live. That these tomatoes that I'm buying in the middle of winter that are ripened perfectly were picked by somebody who can't even afford to buy them for the price that they get paid to pick them. The complexities of our food system are so vast and so gray that it's so easy to throw up our hands and say, I don't know what to do. And this is where Paul's prayer challenges us and where we get some insight. For Paul doesn't say, dig your head in the ground and just it'll all go away, but he encourages us to pray for knowledge and wisdom. Why? In order that we will be able to have right living, to discern the difference between good and evil. So does it matter if you eat bacon or not? Should you always buy organic? Should you become a vegetarian? If you live in Michigan, should you eat bananas? Because let me give you a little hint, if you don't know this, bananas don't grow anywhere near here. I love avocados. Do I need to move back to the Dominican Republic to a place where I can grow them in order to consume them? We're not meant to become the food police, because food can quickly become an idol, and we become slave to that as well. What we are meant to do is to think critically before we consume. So when you take that second helping of chicken fingers, give thought to the fact that this was a chicken. Give thought to the fact that there was somebody who grew this and harvested this for you. Before you grab 10 plates of something, think, do I really need all this food? And ultimately, what this leads us to do is to give thanks. And that's why we say grace. We don't do it because we're pious, but we stop, we think, and we thank, and we bless God as the giver of the gift that we are about to receive, not consume. This week, we have the opportunity to engage deeper in conversations about food with the Critical Issues Symposium, and I highly encourage you Tuesday night at 7 and Wednesday morning when you're going to want to sleep in, but I promise you're not going to want to miss it, at 9 o'clock in the morning to come to engage in this conversation, to participate in the workshops. And as you do so, may we all pray with Paul that our love will continue to grow and overflow more and more with knowledge and wisdom to help us discern what is best so that we can harvest the fruit of righteousness, right living, that comes to the glory and praise of God. Let it be so. Amen. You may go in peace.